Well, good morning, church. We are beginning a new series called Holy. That's it, simply holy. Many people have said holiness is God's least popular attribute, perhaps the most overlooked and underappreciated attribute. It's certainly not as popular as some of the other ones we talk about. It doesn't get as much airtime as his love or his mercy, grace, presence, kindness, gentleness. It doesn't get as much focus as those ones. While it may be one of the least popular attributes, that is entirely on our shoulders because it is one of the most mentioned attributes of God in the Bible. Holiness is talked about over 600 times. So why is it the least popular? Why does it not get as much focus? I want to suggest to us all this morning that the holiness of God is the most costly attribute for us. Because the holiness of God is the most personally confronting attribute. Considering the holiness of God necessarily makes us examine our own lives as well. So the holiness of God demands a response from us. One pastor, while preaching on this idea, said, he called his whole talk. He said, "Here's the message you do not want to hear, because it's just that costly." So maybe I can borrow from him and say, "Here's a message we don't want to hear, because it's just so costly." Exploring the holiness of God is costly. It's also risky. I won't lie. When people throughout history have encountered the holiness of God, they have become undone. Buildings have rumbled. People have been humbled, moved, rattled, and shaken to the core. And yet, as a church family, for the next 3 weeks, we want to dare make our way forward pursuing a holy God. To encounter and be encountered by this holy God. And to together lay ourselves at the feet of God, saying, "Whatever you have for us, here we are." So to start this series, I invite you to come and to join me in Isaiah chapter 6. I've been living in this passage for a while now, and I'm excited to have you all join me. Isaiah chapter 6. I so believe that there is something for every single one of us in Isaiah 6 today. It's the encounter of the prophet Isaiah with God, starting with verse 1, which says this: "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple." All right, it's a dramatic start. Isaiah, he talks about the king. He's like, Uzziah died. King Uzziah became king at 16. He reigned for 52 years. 52 years is a long time. I mean, think back 52 years ago. I know it feels like March of 2020, but it was a lot before that. King Uzziah was a good king. He was a good administrator. He was a good military leader. And during his reign, the country had developed and grown in virtually every way. Now, I know it's not Queen Elizabeth's 70 years, but it's nothing to dismiss either. You know, King Uzziah went to war and fought a lot, like himself. He endured severe earthquakes, and the varying life expectancies in 8th century and the demands on a king at that point, 52 years was a long time, and he was a beloved king. King Uzziah even gets mentioned in Jesus' genealogy. But King Uzziah's life came to an end. Chronicles tells us that at the end of his life, the power, the authority, it went to his head. And we read that he went into the temple and there was 81 priests saying, no, 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 stop, stop. And King Uzziah brushed them aside and he walked into the temple. And immediately upon doing so, leprosy struck him. And so for the very end of Uzziah's life, this beloved king spent it entirely in isolation, being banned entirely from the temple that he entered. So notice the introduction here from Isaiah, where one king is banned from the temple in Uzziah. Isaiah says, but I see another king enthroned there. Where one throne is vacated, Isaiah's like, but I see someone on the throne. Like, don't miss the fact that Uzziah's name here is only used as a timestamp for his encounter with God. And it reminds us all this morning that whether it be in Isaiah chapter 6 or the genealogy of Jesus, that all kings of this world are only ever a footnote to what can happen when we see God. When we get a vision of who he is. And this opening line also reminds us that time will eventually get everyone on a throne on earth. And time will also get everything that's on the throne of your life too, unless it be God. Unless it be God. In a year of tremendous national sadness and upheaval and mourning King Uzziah's passing, in a year where the Assyrian Empire were marching upon them to take them out, the most noteworthy moment for the nation was one man's glimpse of God. I long for that to be the case this year too. For all of us, that we can get a glimpse of God. Isaiah sees the Lord high and exalted in the temple. And then he continues on. And I want us to try to listen to this as though we've never heard it before. In verse 2, we read, this is Isaiah saying, above him, the one on the throne, were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings, they covered their faces. With two, they covered their feet. And with two, they were flying. And they were calling to one another, holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. So Isaiah, he sees several seraphs, or plural, seraphim. Now, there is no way to like even come close to trying to describe what a seraph was. Like, there's just, no matter how hard I try, it's going to be inadequate. Here's one artist's attempt. It's pretty unique. But the scriptures tell us that seraphs were these angelic creatures, and their name literally means burning ones. They've got wings and they're burning, and they're angelic creatures. And whether it looks like that or nothing like that, these fiery angelic winged beings are singing out loud, holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. And as they're doing that, the temple is filling with smoke. The Lord is on the throne. The doorposts and the thresholds are shaking. And it's this powerful moment. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. In the scriptures writing, not unlike our communication, anytime something is repeated, it's a sign of emphasis. Now, we know that, right? Like, stop, 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 stop. Like maybe the priest did with King Uzziah. It's a way of like emphasizing the message. Or, you know, hurry, hurry, hurry. And every parent is like, yeah, that was my morning. But this is the only time, there's only two times in scripture where something is repeated three times. We read one earlier in Revelation chapter 4, and this. The only time in the whole Bible where something is repeated three times is not love, 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 or mercy, 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 or grace, grace, grace. It is holy, holy, holy. It's the Lord Almighty. So what does this holy mean? Well, I mean, it's like it's a super Christian-y word, right? And that is the technical term. You know, it gets thrown around a bunch, right? Holy Bible, holy land, holy water. Holier than thou, maybe a little less positive. Some of you are like, I only know Holy Grail. Or maybe holy cow. Okay, anyone else here grow up in an environment where you were like, you weren't allowed to say holy because it was such a special word? And so you kind of have the cringy memory of saying like, hokey smokes. Okay, just me? Okay, well, I thought I would have been among some friends here. cool, okay. What does holy mean? A friend of FAC, friend of mine, my theology professor, Bernie Vandewall, this is how he defines holiness. He says, holiness is the transcendence of absolute otherness that is basic to God's being. Now, when you see that and your mind goes like, what? That's a good sign. You're on the right track. Because God is just that other. Holy means, on the broadest level, to be separate or distinct. This is fundamentally who God is. Like Bernie says, it is essential to God's being. God is a cut above. He is entirely separate. From what? From everything. From everyone, from everywhere. At God's core is a total transcendent otherness. It means his ways are not our ways. It means his thoughts are not our thoughts. It means his love is not our love. He is totally and essentially separate, distinct, a cut above, in a class all of his own. He is all and only good, pure, righteous, thoroughly pure and holy without blemish. He is infinite, incomprehensible, thoroughly other, alone in his strength, alone in his reliability, in his love, in his presence, in his grace. He is a cut above in every way. He has wisdom, but he is wisdom. He gives strength because he is strength. He has purity because he is pure. He has love to give and to lavish upon us, but he is love. He gives life because he is life. Who is like our God? Nobody. Nothing. He is God all by himself. God all by himself. And get this, when we think about holiness, it's easy to think about like a moral or ethical component. But God, in his essence, is always holy, holy, holy. His holiness is always at its zenith, the peak. There is no dip in his holiness. There is no wavering. God is only ever holy, holy, holy. So Isaiah has this vision of God. He says, oh, the whole temple, like the temple can't even contain the hem of his robe. But then Isaiah hears the seraphs singing. And where Isaiah said God fills the temple, the seraphs are like, no, 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 no. The whole earth is full of his glory. And Isaiah learns that God is holy not just way up there, but he is holy everywhere. Holy, 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 everywhere. All at once. And Isaiah gets this glimpse. And this is how Isaiah writes out his response. He says, "Woe to me, I cried, I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it, he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." I want us to notice in this encounter what Isaiah does and what God does here. Notice that upon seeing God, Isaiah doesn't join in the seraph's worship. He doesn't respond by saying, "I know that song, holy, holy, holy." He didn't join in the song. Isaiah didn't start worshiping. He didn't start begging for help either. He didn't even pray and say, "God, if you do this for me, then I'll join that song. I can learn those lyrics." He just says, "Woe is me, I am undone. I'm ruined." One glimpse of God and his holiness, and Isaiah was like, "I am so not that." I also want us to notice what God had done up until this point. Because God just existed. God doesn't say anything here yet. He doesn't verbally condemn Isaiah. He doesn't judge him. God merely existed in this moment, and we see that the holiness of God alone, when experienced and seen, fundamentally convicts us too. God is holy to the degree that anything unlike him becomes so obvious in his presence. So when we encounter his holiness, we also discover, oh man, I'm not that. Right? You ever think, like, you'll see a post and it's like, "Oh, that looks pretty straight." And you see one that is actually straight right beside it and it's like, "Oh, I wasn't even close." This is what I mean when I say the holiness of God is costly and it demands a response. Because when we see his holiness, his purity, his totally otherness, it also tells us who we are. We discover, I am not that. Isaiah declares doom on himself. He says, "I'm undone, I'm shaken, I'm shattered. My lips are unclean, I'm ruined. And the people I love, their lips are also unclean." I want to just remind us who said that. This was a prophet of God. This was a virtuous man. Isaiah was a great man, a godly man, a man whose occupation was speaking on behalf of God. And, like, by the way, for the prophets in the Old Testament, if they didn't do it right, it didn't end well for them. He spoke on behalf of God, and yet his declaration is, "My lips are so unclean." And also, like, what we're looking at here, it's found in Isaiah chapter 6. And I've heard this passage preached. I've read this passage a bunch, but I had never really considered that this is, like I just said, the sixth chapter, which means there are five whole chapters before this where Isaiah was proclaiming and speaking on God's behalf. For five chapters, Isaiah was saying, "Woe to you, these people. Woe to you, these people. Here's who God is." God says, I don't need your services. I want your heart." Isaiah had done all this prophetic speaking on behalf of God. 10 times in those first five chapters, Isaiah talks about the Lord Almighty. Using that phrase, he talks about God. 9 times, Isaiah used that term, woe, declaring doom that he had just turned on himself. And we see that there was so much familiarity with God without actually seeing God. Is that true for you? Do you know more about God than encounters with God? I want us to recognize that we, every single one of us, are all in danger of looking out at others with judgment, of speaking about God, speaking on behalf of God, without actually encountering him ourselves, without being fundamentally undone by God's holiness and our lack thereof. I want to challenge us all today. We can only ever be self-righteous or holier than thou when we compare ourselves to others. It is impossible to have a holier than thou looking down on other people, judgmentally type attitude when we are comparing ourselves to God. You know, now, it's a little bit easier when we compare ourselves to others at times, depending who you're comparing to. Max Lucado said, trying to compare ourselves to God is like trying to impress NASA with a paper airplane. Doesn't work. But you might be like, my paper airplane is really good. It's way better than that guy's. You're looking at the wrong spot. When we look to God, it fundamentally convicts us. When we see God, we will always be undone ourselves. And when we are undone, we do not look around and judge other people for being undone themselves. So I can say this with confidence today. Show me a prideful person, and I'll show you someone who's not beholding the holiness of God. Show me a judgmental person, and I'll show you someone who is not beholding the holiness of God. I know about myself. Whenever I start to look at people around me with anything other than a heart of love and just brokenness for the world around me, I know that I've taken my eyes off the high and exalted Lord. Because I have never encountered God where I have not been immediately confronted by my lack of holiness and undone in his presence. I know if I'm ever looking at someone in a state of undone, whatever that might be, and you might use a whole different lot of language to describe that. Oh, they're this. Oh, they're that. Oh, they're this. Oh, they're mean. Oh, they're bullies. Oh, they're vicious. They're malicious. They're lying. Whatever language you might use, whatever the individual person in your life might be, talking about them in their undoneness. But we can only look down on that when we're not being undone ourselves in light of the holiness of God. I've never encountered God where I've not been immediately confronted. And we see this with Isaiah, right? My lips are unclean. And then and only then he says, and the people I love, my country too, with this self-doom declaration, I am ruined. But here's the deal, church. God doesn't blast us with his holiness to break us, but to remake us. God doesn't blast us with his holiness to break us, but to remake us. God's holiness brings about our wholeness. Isaiah's undone, he's broken, but notice God initiates the response, and in the very place of Isaiah's self-aware brokenness, God touches him. In the very place where Isaiah says, I am ruined, I have unclean lips, God meets him right there and points out to all of us that whatever God reveals in our lives, he reveals because he wants to heal it. And so if there's something coming to the surface in your life right now where it's like, man, that is so not the holiness of God, he's bringing that to the surface because he wants to reveal, to heal. He's showing you his holiness, not to break you, but to remake you. Isaiah was met in his deepest place of brokenness, but his lips were touched by heaven. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the book of Isaiah is a really long one. And he continues to use those very lips to bring about the restoration and the saving and the proclaiming of God's goodness to God's people. God met Isaiah in the place of brokenness, and God does that today. Do you trust him with your undoing? Do you trust him to remake you? Jackie Hill Perry, while preaching on this passage, said, "If God is holy, it means he cannot sin. And if God cannot sin, it means he cannot sin against you. Doesn't that make him the most trustworthy being that exists?" Because of who God is, we can trust him. So if there is something bubbling to the surface in the secret parts of your heart, you can trust that that is happening because he wants to reveal it so he can heal it. When our sin undoes us, when we are scattered, when we are shattered, when we are scared, we can trust God no matter what because he is holy, holy, holy. Are we allowing God to speak to us? Are we posturing ourselves before him? Are we trusting him to touch us and to heal us and to remake us? The story of God from the start to today until eternity is the story of an unfathomably holy God that initiates and meets us in the place of our undoing to restore us. Not to break us, but to remake us. Do we trust him? Do you trust him? Do you trust the holy, holy, holy God? From this moment where Isaiah's lips are touched, Isaiah says this in verse 8. He says, "Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here am I, send me.'" The "then" at the beginning there is important because where before Isaiah could only ever hear the voice of the seraphim, right? He saw, but he didn't hear the voice of the Lord. Now, after the Lord initiated relationship, spoke to him, touched his lips, encountered him, he hears from God himself. God speaks, and when we are blasted by his holiness and we respond and trust him, we can see him, we can hear him, we can encounter him. Jesus reminds us of this when he says in Matthew 5, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." Do you see God? Do you see him in your life? Do you see him in the beauty of his creation? Do you hear God's voice today? Right now? Is there a still small stirring in your soul, seeing his holiness? The Lord said, "Whom shall I send? Who will go for us?" And Isaiah answers immediately, immediately. And he actually answers fairly atypically, by the way. Notice that he doesn't say, "Here I am," right? That's the typical way of responding. He says, "Here am I." And there's an important difference there. You know, "here I am" is spatial and connected to the world around us, right? Here I am, Southeast Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Here I am, connected to location. But "here am I" is surrender. "Here am I" is I'm posturing myself before you. "Here am I, send me." God gives no clarity on the assignment. God gives no indication of where the person or thing would be sent to. He doesn't give a roadmap how to get there. No instructions on the cost, the difficulty, or the pain. Yet when God says, who will go? Isaiah immediately, without qualification, says, here am I, send me. Beating the seraphim to this. He's like, I will go, here I am. The answer is yes. Lord, when you speak, the answer is yes. Anytime, anywhere, any cost, my answer is yes. I can't say no. I've been remade. I'm here. No, here I am. Send me wherever, whenever, whatever. Here am I. Take away everything that hasn't been burned by your holiness and send me. When was the last time we submitted like this? Total submission. Wherever, whatever, whenever, I'll go. When was the last time we were so undone by his holiness that we just said, yes, I'm in. And this is, like I said, what I mean. The holiness of God is a costly holiness. We see how holy, pure, and true he is, and we also see who we are. But we also see how God initiates and meets us in our pain. One glimpse of God may shatter us. It may stir us. It may convict us. It may send us to the ends of the earth, but it remakes us. But make no mistake, it may also send us to the ends of the earth or to the most uncomfortable places in our hearts, the most difficult conversations, the most vulnerable confessions. So today, in the presence of a holy God, what's your response? Confession, worship, surrender, having a conversation, going somewhere. Is there anywhere in your world, emotionally, physically, spiritually, that you may think, I'm not going there? Can we surrender that? Say, Lord, here am I. I've seen your holiness. Here am I. Is there an unclean mouth? Unclean lips, unclean practice, unclean behavior, unclean partnership, unclean attitude that has been revealed as an undoing today. Oh, that God's holiness would break us in order to remake us. And may we respond. As we make our way to the end, I want to fast forward one chapter in Isaiah's life. One chapter, Isaiah chapter 7. The formerly unclean-lipped prophet, a few verses later, makes this profound declaration. Isaiah 7:14, it says, therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. Emmanuel means God with us. This holy, holy, holy God has come in the flesh. Jesus came for all those who recognize they've been undone. And Jesus came not to break us, but to remake us. That's why he became one of us. And we know today that this God is not a God who is far off. He is a God who came and moved into our neighborhood. The holy, holy, holy God who hung out with the broken, who hung out with the undone, who hung out with the sick, who hung out with the hurting. For the unclean lips, he took on lips. For the unclean hearts, he took on a heart. For the brokenness of our lives, he himself was broken. And right now, we very well may be in the undoing phase. There may be things going on in our lives where we're getting a glimpse of the holy, recognizing how we are so not that. And while we may be feeling undone, doomed, broken, scared, fearful, rather than coals in the hands of a burning one, I want us to see Jesus. The Jesus who comes and says, hello. The journey's been long, friend. It's been hard. I see your hurt and your pain. I see you. And I love you. See, I've prepared a fire. I'm not going to touch you with the coals. Come, sit. My body was broken so you can be made whole. Jesus comes to each and every one of us. Holiness perfectly revealed. The most attractive person to the most undone people. Some of the very, very last words before he was betrayed and died, he took some bread. He broke it and he says, this is my body. It's broken for you. And then he took a cup after and he said, this is my blood. It's been shed for you. So you can have a new way of being, a new way of living in this world. Jesus gave us everything. Jesus gave us himself. This holy, holy, holy God took on flesh, made his dwelling with us. His holiness was revealed in Jesus, not to break us, but to remake us. And these elements are ways in which we can feel the touch of Jesus in our lives, physically recognizing what he has done for us. And in the same way that these small things will nourish us in small ways, the body of Jesus, this holy, holy, holy God, nourishes, strengthens, remakes us as new people. But the Bible's very clear when it comes to taking these things in 1 Corinthians. It says that we are all to examine our lives before we do this in the wrong way. So church, in light of the holiness of God, in light of his moving towards us, is there any other response rather than submission saying, here am I? The answer is yes. Oh, may we respond, surrender, and follow. So First Alliance Church, the body of Christ Jesus, broken for you and for me. Let's take together. First Alliance Church, the blood of Jesus shed for us all for the forgiveness of our sins. Church family, in the presence of a holy, holy, holy God, may we surrender. May we submit. May we say together, here am I, wherever, whenever, whatever the cost, I am in. God's holiness is not to break us, but to remake us together. Let's worship this holy, holy, holy God together.